Well, good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Naomi Green. I just completed the Applied Epidemiology Fellowship Program in New Mexico. And what I'd like to talk about today is an analysis that we did in New Mexico. I don't know if any of you are Bone Thugs and Harmony fans, but that's kind of where I got my title from. So meet me at the crossroads. So how many people in this room have heard of this concept of intersectionality? Hands. Awesome. I don't have to do this presentation now. You can do this. So for those of you who have heard about this, who have not heard about this, this is a concept that's pretty old at this point. It was created by a legal scholar by the name of Kimberly Crenshaw in her very seminal work, Mapping the Margins. And really it's just a framework for kind of understanding how people with multiple identities might be treated within society. So it's kind of an infographic of one way we could visualize intersectionality. And we could add multiple circles to this infographic. And part of the reason I'm just personally interested in intersectionality, but part of the reason that I embarked on this project is there was a great article in the American Journal of Public Health by Dr. Lisa Boleg that talked about why it's so important in public health for us to think about incorporating intersectionality and that framework into the work that we do. And this is just a piece from that. And the name of the article is The Problem with the Phrase Women and Minorities when we're thinking about these differences that we see in equities. So there's actually a very large evidence base around the health disparities that lesbian, gay, and bisexual adults face within our society. And there's a part of that evidence that talks about specifically kind of the intersection between being lesbian, gay, and bisexual or queer and being a member of a racial or ethnic minority. So for example, if you belong to both of those groups, you have greater odds of functional limitation. There's an increased odds of suicide attempt. And this third point is more about the greater the number of discriminations that you face. So in this case, they looked at gender discrimination, racial discrimination, and sexual orientation discrimination. You're a lot more likely to have a past year substance use disorder. So the purpose of the study in New Mexico was to take a look at the intersection of sexual orientation and race ethnicity for just a few selected health outcomes. So part of what we did first is we did some exploratory work, and that became the basis of a report that we did on inequities by sexual orientation within our state. And then based on some of that exploratory work, we picked these four outcomes to look further at in the intersectional analysis. So many of you are probably familiar with this data source. This is the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. It's a random digit dialed survey of all adults in your state, and it's meant to be representative of the adults in your state. In order for us to have enough power to be able to do the analysis, we had to aggregate several years of data, as you can see here. And this is the question that we've used in the past to ascertain sexual orientation. We ask people whether or not they consider themselves to be one or more of the following. You are probably shaking your head because there's a couple of points on here that are important to mention, which is that transgender, which is not actually a sexual orientation, rather a gender identity, this is something that we have fixed. And now in New Mexico, we actually are beginning to ask people their gender identity and then separate from sexual orientation. And this is how we defined our health outcomes. Again, these may look very familiar if you're familiar with this data source. So for prediabetes and depression, we just ask folks whether or not they've ever been diagnosed with one of these two things. And then for heavy drinking and obesity, so for heavy drinking, there are a variety of questions on the BRFSS that ask folks about their alcohol consumption. And then based on the answers to those questions, we calculate a variable for heavy drinking based on the definition from the CDC. And then similarly with obesity, we ask folks their self-reported height and weight, and then we calculate their body mass index. So these are the steps that we went through for the statistical analysis. So we built some very simple models that just included an interaction term to look for effect measure modification between sexual orientation and race ethnicity. And then because of our sample size, we decided to use forward stepwise regression to build models to incorporate potential confounders. And then we reviewed all of those models, and we used the AIC criteria to define which one would be the best fit for our data. And that's the models that I'm going to present. But before looking at that, I'm just going to look just to show you very quickly some demographics. So these are some demographics by sexual orientation, and these are the things that are significantly different when you compare lesbian, gay, and bisexual adults in New Mexico to straight adults. So LGB adults are more likely to be younger. They're more likely to have a college degree, although they're actually more likely to live in a household with an income of less than $15,000. They're more likely to be unable to work. I don't think it's surprising that they're less likely to be married than straight adults, and more likely to be living in one of our metropolitan counties. But I think what's interesting is to then get into some of the, look at the just the LGB population itself, and look at some of the differences by race ethnicity. So even though overall in the LGB population, this group is more likely to have a college education, when you break that down by race ethnicity, what you actually see is, for example, our Hispanic and American Indian populations in New Mexico who identify as LGB are actually less likely to have a college degree compared to their white counterparts. And we see something similar when we look at being unable to work. So, for example, Hispanic LGB adults are significantly more likely to report that they're unable to work in comparison to white LGB adults. And even though the American Indian population has a greater prevalence, that's not statistically significant. And that's also true here. So with the annual household income of less than $15,000, we could think of this as poverty. Hispanic adults and American Indian LGB adults are far more likely than their white counterparts to have a household income of less than $15,000. And in fact, LGB white adults seem to be on par with straight white adults. So these are the results of our models. So what I've decided to do is present these as forest plots for each of these individual groups. So you can see the estimated odds ratio. Each of these is going to be adjusted for different factors because, again, the things that we adjusted for were based on the best fit model. And so I've presented them here as dots, the odds ratios with 95% confidence intervals, and just drew that red line to show you where the one is. So even though it's not a measure of statistical significance, whether or not those 95% confidence intervals cross the line, they give you some sense of whether or not something is significantly different than some of the other odds. So in this case, for prediabetes, if you identify as lesbian, gay, and bisexual, and also American Indian, you have almost seven times the odds of reporting prediabetes in comparison to straight white adults. And we can see that that lesbian, gay, and bisexual Hispanic adults also have increased odds. We see something a little bit different for depression. So this is the odds of depression adjusted for a variety of factors. So LGB white adults have 2.5 times the odds of straight white adults of reporting that they've ever been diagnosed with depression. And we also see elevated odds for lesbian, gay, and bisexual Hispanic adults. So we didn't actually do three-way interaction because it can be quite difficult to interpret, but there were some models that we did just for females and just for males. And so part of the reason for that is because there were some instances, and heavy drinking was one of them, where we saw disparities between lesbian and bisexual females and straight females, but we didn't see those disparities among males. And so here what I'm presenting is just the estimated odds of heavy drinking among females, again, bisexual orientation and race ethnicity. And we see that lesbian and bisexual white females have about 2.5 times the odds of straight females of reporting heavy drinking. So I showed the definition earlier, but that's 8 or more drinks within a week. Lesbian and bisexual Hispanic females also have elevated odds of heavy drinking in comparison to straight white females in New Mexico. And again, so this is the last one here. This is the estimated odds of obesity. Again, this was something where we didn't necessarily see disparities among women between lesbian and bisexual women and straight women, but we did see these disparities when we just looked at men. So I just built a model for men. And here what seems to be really driving this is an elevated odds of obesity among gay and black males. Now, I will say that individuals who identify as black or African American and Asian within New Mexico, those populations are actually quite small. And so that, and you can see that the confidence intervals around this odds is pretty wide. So there are a number of limitations for this particular study. I think one of the most important ones is that we're only looking at identity. So sexual orientation is a multifaceted concept, right? It can contain identity, it's about behavior, it's about sexual attraction. And so there are folks that might not be included in this study because they don't identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, but do engage in same-sex behavior or same-sex attraction and might still be discriminated against in society because of it. These outcomes are also measured by self-report. Now, that's not a limitation in and of itself necessarily, but when I look at the data on depression, for example, I wonder if that's partially because there are some people who don't have access to mental health care services. And so if the question is, have you ever been diagnosed with depression, the understanding is that you would have had to have access to mental health care services to even know whether or not that's true. It doesn't mean you don't have depression. It just means you may never have been diagnosed with it. And I put this last one up here because I think in the world of sociology in particular, there's a lot of talk about who we use as our reference group. And sometimes we tend to use straight individuals when we're looking at disparities among LGB people. We tend to use white individuals when we look into racial ethnic disparities. But occasionally what that can do sometimes in the literature is kind of make it seem like whiteness or straightness or maleness or cisgenderedness is the norm, and it kind of makes everybody else other to that. And so I put it up here as a limitation just to kind of think about that in our work. It does make it easier from a statistical perspective because we can then compare across all the models, but it's just something to kind of keep in the back of our minds when we do disparities research. So some very easy conclusions. In fact, race ethnicity does modify the effect of sexual orientation on a variety of health outcomes, and in several cases, it's a synergistic effect. So whenever you're doing logistic regression and you're incorporating an interaction term, you're by definition looking at multiplicative effect measure modification. So in other words, those two variables together have a much greater impact on the individual than if you just were to add those two together. And again, like I said, we did not look at three-way interaction because it's almost impossible to interpret, but there are important differences that we see not only by sexual orientation and race ethnicity, but also in gender as well. These are some of my references here, and definitely some acknowledgments. My mentors at the Department of Health, as well as some community members that looked over not just this work, but also the report that we did, and of course, any acknowledgments to CSTE, CDC, and SAMHSA, who are responsible for my fellowship. And I think I've had... Yeah, so one of the difficulties that we've had difficulties in collecting information on transgender individuals, and part of that is the way that the BRFSS used to ascertain gender. So we actually used to ascertain gender by voice. So the interviewer decides whether or not the person on the other end of the phone is male or female. What we've done in New Mexico, because we don't have the data to look at transgender, what we've decided to do is to change our gender question. So to do a two-step question where we ask people what their sex was at birth and how they currently identify. And we're hoping that if we continue to do that for the next few years, we'll be able to do some reports about our transgender community. Oh gosh. Okay. I think I saw this gentleman over here first.
Do you have recommendations or guidelines on alternative reference?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't. But it's something, so it's a limitation that I like to keep in the back of my mind. I was part of a very interesting conversation at the Society for Prevention Research Conference last year where this came up, and I don't think we had a good answer for it then either, but I do think it's important to keep in the back of my mind when we do the work. Okay, I think I saw this young woman back here. Yes. Yeah, so what we did, this particular analysis is also in our report looking at health disparities by sexual orientation. So we went to several of our community groups, Young Women United and Fierce Pride, which is an advocacy organization that's actually kind of an umbrella of several LGBT groups. And so we've presented this data to them, and it's kind of helped to drive some of the grants that they're going after to do their work, as well as kind of thinking about how they want to target some of their interventions as well.
Thank you.
Sorry. Yeah. Good. Okay, I'll go. Yes.
Nice presentation, great work. I was just curious, it struck me as a little bit extreme to call a drinking week for women heavy, and I know it's a PC definition. I wonder if you looked at,
there's only one drink a week, plus one.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I could get that information for you. But I do just want to say that heavy drinking is associated with some types of chronic issues. So I think it's still important to look at heavy drinking. And I don't know. I'm not from the CDC, and I don't know if any CDC folks are in here that want to stand up for their definition. I think it's a good definition.
Okay, we have time for one last question. Yeah.
I just have a quick question. I think it was really interesting what you said about depression and white females. And I'm wondering the access, you know, the other genders or other, race or ethnicities, they don't have access to the mental health. Did you ever consider doing the screening questions or future or depression?
No, I don't know. I know that in general, so New Mexico is a health shortage area in general, and unfortunately we are a very poor state, and we also are fairly rural. So a lot of our communities, including individuals who identify as American Indian and Hispanic, tend to live in more semi-rural and rural areas, just because that's where they live. In terms of how questions get onto our BRFSS, it is a cutthroat process. I don't know if it's like that in your state. I see some nodding heads, and so that would probably, I think, be left, you know, maybe to our mental health epi to maybe decide whether or not to change those questions. I'm actually not sure that the depression, that question about whether or not you've ever been diagnosed, may be in the core rather than as a state added. So if we wanted to do screening questions, we may have to do them as like a state added module.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.